You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming. You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Well, good afternoon. I'm Pat Smits. The program It's the Law. I find it interesting that Chris always seems to need to play that spot about not taking my views, and they're not the chamber views, and it somehow is always played right before I come on Friday afternoon. But in any event, that's fine. It's true that these are my views, and that's all. But before we talk about the program today, let's talk about the weather. And if you've been out there, it's kind of cloudy, but we certainly didn't get all the rain that had been predicted. So what's going to happen for the rest of today? Today it's about 46 degrees out there, so it's certainly not warm. And tonight we're supposed to have some clouds, low of about 28 degrees. So what's happening tomorrow? Well, there's a slight chance of snow, high of about 41 degrees. So if it doesn't snow, it could easily rain, and not a great day. But the snow, if it comes, it'll be after 9 in the morning, and there will be the possibility of precipitation, but it's only about a 20% chance. And tomorrow night, again, there's a slight chance of snow. Looks like Sunday is going to be a nice day, high about 43 degrees, so it looks like that's the day to get out and do something. And we're expecting, again, a slight chance of rain on Sunday night, and then into Monday could be rain or snow, depending on how cold it gets. So by Tuesday, it should be warming up and mostly sunny, high in the low 50s. So over the weekend, don't expect a great weekend, but looks like Sunday might be the nicer day. So what are we doing today? Well, we're talking about some legal things, obviously, because the program It's the Law. I am an attorney here in Hunterdon County. My name is Pat Smits, if you haven't heard my program before. And so what I'd like to do today is just to talk to you about some of the legal news. And my guest who was going to come in had a last-minute problem, and that's always what happens with attorneys. We think we're going to have some time, and then something happens, and we end up in court. In fact, that's why I'm just here. Had hoped to be here a little earlier, but that's been my situation this week and in the last couple weeks. So what is happening in the news? Well, the one of the things that as far as PSENG, in a novel ruling that affects insurance coverage for $500 million in losses claimed by New Jersey's largest utility company, and that was as a result of Hurricane Sandy, a judge held on March 23rd that carriers for public service electric and gas cannot rely on policy language concerning floods to limit coverage for damages caused by Sandy's storm surge. So that's a real win for JCP&L. Of course, let's hope our rates don't still go up, even though it they've won that one. So their carriers are going to have to make sure that they have that coverage. The insurance law, in fact, there's a case, Public Service Enterprise Group versus Ace American Insurance Company. This was an Essex County case, and that dispute concerned the meaning of certain language in the first-party property policies issued by the insurer Ace American Insurance Companies, and that allegedly provided coverage for losses that Public Service incurred as a result of property damage caused by Superstorm Sandy. So what happened, of course, and we all know, on October 29, 2012, when Superstorm Sandy made landfall, brought that storm surge of record-breaking heights. I mean, even those of us who were in Hunterdon County, there was a tremendous amount of damage, damage here, damage in Morris County. But certainly the storm surge inundated and damaged Public Service and Electric's property throughout New Jersey. And PSE&G made an insurance claim under its first-party property policies. And what at the time of Superstorm Sandy, PSE&G was insured under primary and excess property policies that were issued by Ace American and other named defendants for that 2011-2012 period. Now, the amount of coverage available under the policies is $1 billion, so obviously this is really significant. However, there was no sublimit in the policies for named windstorms other than named windstorms in Florida. So isn't that interesting? If Sandy had hit Florida, they apparently in Florida had a sublimit for policies for named windstorms. But here in New Jersey, there was no such sublimit. Now, however, there was a $250 million sublimit in the policies for losses caused by flood. There was a quote, it was by flood, and a $50 million limit for losses to property, and this was a quote, located in flood zones A and V. Now, the insurance company paid out on some of PSE&G's claim, but PSE&G estimated that its total damages exceeded $500 million, and the plaintiff and the insurance company moved for what we call summary judgment with respect to the coverage disputes. And the court, as I said, it was a court in the law division in Essex County, found that the applicable language of the policy and canons of contract interpretation and extrinsic evidence proffered by both parties, as well as the relevant case law, all pointed to the conclusion that the storm surge losses are not subject to the flood limits, or I should say the flood sublimits. And therefore, the plaintiff's motion for summary judgment was granted, meaning that PSE&G can proceed against the insurance company. Now, how is that relevant to the ordinary person? Well, if you suffered a loss as a result of Sandy, I think that this case should be of great interest, because it could be, if your policy said you were unable to collect because of the policy limited on floods, and in fact did not cover floods, this would be certainly precedent. I'm sure that at some point that this will wind its way up through the appellate division. But I think this is a very significant case that anyone who suffered damage during Superstorm Sandy needs to take a look at if, in fact, your insurer did not provide coverage. So, again, the case is PSE&G, or Public Service Enterprise Group, Inc., whoever thought of that, we always call them PSE&G, versus Ace American Insurance Company. But this is not dependent only on the insurance company. It depends on exactly what your coverage provides. And this certainly is something that's probably going to be news to a lot of people because they thought they were not covered if they did not have flood damage. So depends, I guess, on the type of damage. But certainly they said that the storm surge losses are not subject to the flood limits in this particular policy. So that's a recent case, and it was decided by a trial court. And what the trial court did was rule in favor of PSE&G. That is not a case that was published, meaning that it was not approved for publication. However, it would still be a case that would be an important case to take a look at for anyone who might have questions about whether their insurance should have covered more of the damage. So if you have any questions about that, you can print out that case by going to the judiciary website so that we can get both published and unpublished cases now. It's just that attorneys cannot cite decisions in unpublished cases as precedent. So what else is happening? There was approved for publication a land use case. And this is probably not of interest to many people, but what it did say is that in this particular case, as the court concluded in earlier cases, and the earlier case was Wilson versus the City of Long Branch, and that was decided by our Supreme Court in 1958, and this case was, again, this is a Supreme Court case that was published, I believe, March 23rd. That may be off by a day or two. But the Supreme Court indicated in that case that there's certain substatutes subsections of the statute. And the statute itself is 40A:12A-5, and the subsections A, B, and D do not violate the Blighted Areas Clause of the New Jersey Constitution. And a determination that an area is blighted and in need of redevelopment does not require a finding that the area negatively affects surrounding properties, so long as the legislative definitions are met. In this case, substantial evidence on the record supported the Hackensack Planning Board's findings that were later adopted by the mayor and the council, that certain lots on Main Street and on Moore Street were part of an area in need of redevelopment. And this, of course, is a controversial area of law, whether or not, and it usually happens, of course, in areas where poor people are residing. But there is the possibility that this land can be redeveloped. And the need for redevelopment does not require finding that the area negatively affects surrounding properties. And it as long as the legislative definitions in the statute are met. And so that is significant for people who, in fact, are living in areas where redevelopment is going on, so that it's not easy to just, say no. In fact, you can't say no, because the statute would control in those cases. The U.S. Supreme Court, in another case, has been asked to review a New Jersey Supreme Court holding that arbitration clauses in consumer contracts are not enforceable unless they explicitly waive the right to go to court. And this is a petition for certiorari, was filed by U.S. Legal Services Group, a San Francisco-based law firm that provides debt relief services to clients around the country through contracts with local attorneys, so that whether or not the Supreme Court of the United States takes that, they certainly have been asked to do that and to, you know, make and review the New Jersey Supreme Court decision that arbitration clauses in consumer contracts are not enforceable unless there is a specific waiver to go to court. Now, then, kind of in another area, criminal trial against four rabbis are going to, the trial itself will proceed because a federal judge in Trenton rejected the rabbis' claims that charging them with kidnapping and beating Orthodox Jewish men who refused to grant their wives divorces represents a substantial imposition by government on their religious practice. So this is a test of just how far you can do something claiming religious freedom to do so. And this is always a very interesting area. And this situation apparently, and I don't know the specifics of the case, but one of the real concerns among Orthodox Jews is that in order for a woman to remarry after a civil divorce, she has to be able to get a get, a G-E-T, a get, and only the husband can agree to give her the get. And if he doesn't, she cannot remarry. So there's pressure because it's really, you know, very difficult for the Jewish divorced woman who's Orthodox. She will never be able to remarry unless, in fact, she gets the get. And in this case, apparently, the rabbis, took matters in their own hands when men would not agree. And of course, as a family lawyer, I have seen where men try to bribe or do whatever, pressure their wives to take substantially less of a settlement than they should receive, only because they fear that otherwise they won't, the husband will not agree to give them the get. So in any event, that criminal trial is going to proceed. And as I said, now the New Jersey Supreme Court, when they made it easier for government agencies to condemn private property for redevelopment, they certainly did make it easier in the decision. However, it was a 3-2 ruling, and that's where the majority ruled that condemning agencies do not have to prove that a targeted property has a negative impact on surrounding properties, so that the property can be seized through eminent domain, meaning seized by the public entity, even though they don't have to have that level of proof that, in fact, the property is has a negative impact on surrounding properties. So that was sharply divided, and of course it's divided along the lines of people who believe that a government should be able to take an area and force someone to sell so they can redevelop the area, versus people who say, wait a minute, this is my property, and as long as this is my property and I have a right to do, not everything, but most things I have a right. And if I don't want to, paint my house, I shouldn't have to. If I don't want to, make it look in a certain way, I shouldn't have to. And this is where we always have clashes, because, of course, if you're living next to a property that people dump everything out in the front yard, you're not going to be very happy. But in this particular case, the government does not even have to prove that there's a negative impact on surrounding properties. So the case where there would be a lot of garbage dumped in someone's yard, could fairly easily prove that kind of a negative impact. So in any event, those are some of the cases that are happening, and we're going to take just a short break and hear from some of the people who, provide, the money for us to run this station.
The news is sponsored by Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc.
In America, we believe in a future that is better than today. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has been working hard for their clients' futures, never taking a bailout, helping generations achieve dreams, buy homes, put their kids through college, retire how they want to. Today, Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. They are ready to help you feel more confident about your financial future. Put the strength of a global financial leader to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton, Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you achieve your dreams and goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. That's 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, member FINRA and SIPC.
Well, we're back. The program, It's the Law. I'm Pat Smits, and just going through some of the recent cases, kind of generalizing some of what's been going on and some of the decisions in New Jersey. And most people who know me know that I practice, and my practice is limited to family law. But in the program, I try to bring people up to date as to, what's happening in kind of the legal world or with the legislature and with the cases and what is being decided out there. So another case is a federal judge in Camden has dismissed a suit against social media application Grindr, G-R-I-N-D-R. I've never even heard of it. But in any event, there was a lawsuit by a man facing jail time for sexual encounter with a 13-year-old he met through the site. And the federal judge dismissed that suit because he said that Grindr is shielded from liability under the Communications Decency Act because the act's, what they call, Good Samaritan Clause provides that the application shall not be considered the publisher of any information provided by another party. And so in this case, Chief U.S. District Judge Jerome Simondal of the District Court of New Jersey ruled that the case was going to be dismissed against the social media, and this is some application. And apparently this man, who's facing jail time for the sexual encounter with a 13-year-old, was somehow trying to file a lawsuit and blame this this website or whatever site it is. Those of you who may know, but I mean that's pretty pretty bizarre that he would try to somehow sue whatever application. I mean, sue. It would be like suing Google, suing Facebook, suing anyone just because you met this 13-year-old. And obviously, there was some kind of a sexual encounter, and he's trying to now sue the site where he apparently met this juvenile. I guess that may come under the term, chutzpah. Because it's certainly, pretty amazing that somebody who had a sexual relationship, an adult who had a sexual encounter, and I don't know what the encounter was, obviously, but with a 13-year-old, it doesn't make any difference where he met her. It certainly is not the fault of a website. So what else is, that some of these cases are, so bizarre that they, they make no sense. And I think that's unfortunate, that happens. But in this case, the judge in Camden dismissed the suit. And so that, he did the right thing. Can't stop someone from suing. And that's part of the problem. We really cannot stop someone from filing a lawsuit against you. And unfortunately, it's a real problem when that happens, and there's an expense, and most people need to get an attorney, and it's foolish if you try to represent yourself in most of these cases, because even as an attorney, if I have something that comes up, I would always hire another attorney because it's not something that I would know. It's not in my area of, I guess I can say, expertise. I've been handling matrimonial cases for, 35, 36 years. But I certainly don't know landlord-tenant. There's a situation now that a client called me about Social Security disability. That's just not my forte, so I'm not going to try to handle those things. But there is apparently either this man filed this suit himself or he did find an attorney that filed the suit. So there's another one of the issues always in New Jersey is whether there's an underinsured motorist or an uninsured motorist. And in the case that I'm going to talk to you about, Government Employees Insurance Company, GEICO, the plaintiff in that case was insured, and he asserted a claim for underinsured motorist benefits and a bad faith claim against his carrier. Now, although the trial court bifurcated the claims for trial, meaning they split the claims instead of kept them together, and the trial court held the bad faith claim in abeyance. However, it compelled discovery to proceed on all claims. And what happened is went up to the appellate division. And the appellate division held that it was an abuse of discretion for the trial court to order the discovery on both claims proceed simultaneously. And the appellate division said that in this case, the initial decision to deny the severance motion, meaning there was a motion to sever the claims, and that motion was filed after some discovery related to the bad faith claim had been provided, and before another case was decided. So that what this was an interlocutory appeal, and so that the appellate division said that the interlocutory appeal prevents the question of whether disclosure of some bad faith related material brings the denial of a severance motion and the decision to compel related discovery within the scope of the trial court's proper exercise of discretion. And, that sounds like a lot of gobbledygook, I understand. But in any event, at this point, the appellate division said, no, it did not. And so that he should not have ordered discovery on all issues at that point. Now, there's a case that would be, of course, of interest to attorneys. And that was that retainers for legal services are not subject to the Truth in Lending Act. And an attorney who advances legal services without receipt of the retainer funds is not considered a lender. And that actually was decided back in December, but it was approved for publication on March 13th. So that we're not your lenders, put it that way. There was another case approved for publication, unemployment. It was an unemployment insurance appeal, and in that case, the appellate division looked at NJSA 43:21-5, paren J and paren, and that allows a person to receive unemployment insurance benefits when the individual has left work or was discharged due to circumstances resulting from the victim being a victim of, I guess I need new glasses. But if an individual has left work or was discharged due to circumstances resulting from the individual being a victim of domestic violence, and that allows that person, that victim, to receive unemployment benefits. Now, the statute requires the claimant, meaning the person who's claiming unemployment, to present at least one of six kinds of proof that he or she was a domestic violence victim. Now, that includes documentation or certification of the domestic violence provided by a social worker, member of the clergy, shelter worker, or other professional who has assisted the individual in dealing with the domestic violence. Now, they concluded that the attorney may serve as an other professional. Now, regarding the statute's causation element, the court concluded that being a victim of domestic violence must be a substantial factor in the claimant's decision to resign, but it doesn't need to be the only reason. And then they found that applying these principles, they reversed the Board of Review's denial of benefits and remanded for a new hearing. So this was the board, there's a Board of Review, and if they deny benefits, then there can be an appeal to the Appellate Division. And this can be, you know, really problematic from an employer standpoint, because it you can end up paying unemployment benefits when you really shouldn't have because somebody quit. But in this situation, what they say is if somebody leaves the job, you know, because of domestic violence, and I don't mean domestic violence on the job, I mean domestic violence, there's then a possibility that, in fact, they can get unemployment. And so just be aware of that if you're an employer. And you know, I'm not saying it's a bad law. I'm just saying that it certainly could be a problem if someone just no longer wants to work and can use that as a reason to get unemployment. Because as an employer, we all know that the number of claims has a real effect on the cost of unemployment to us. Now, there's another recent case where a federal judge in Camden denied a motion by professional gambler, this was a professional gambler, Phil Ivey, to dismiss a fraud and racketeering suit, claiming he used an edge sorting scheme to win $9.6 million, and he was playing baccarat at the Borgata Casino. Now, the Borgata's claim for fraud, conspiracy, and racketeering against Ivy and a companion were pled sufficiently to survive a motion to dismiss. Now, this is, again, a U.S. District Court, and that ruling was made by Judge Noel Hillman. So that case is not going to be dismissed. So that was a fraud case against this professional gambler. Now, the New Jersey Supreme Court is considering whether a homeowners association and their maintenance contractors can be held liable for injuries caused when they fail to clear snow and ice from sidewalks that they own and have pledged to maintain. This is a pretty significant case, because what are the requirements? And of course, you know, there are cases, and I understand at least there are cases where if somebody does shovel and does a bad job, they may be held liable. And if they had not shoveled, it might be less liability. Frankly, I don't know. I certainly know that if you're someone out there who has a snow business in the winter, you need to check these things out. I also know from a number of people that their insurance premiums skyrocketed this year because of all the claims made last year. So I'm going to catch my kind of click in my throat. I'll play a couple spots, and then we'll be back with more news about the law.
Hi, I help students gain admission to colleges that are a great academic, social, and financial fit. where they will be successful, happy, and graduate on time with minimal debt. Email Diana at creativecollegeconsulting.com for a free consultation.
USA Radio News. I'm Kelly Sloan. The co-pilot of the German Wings plane hid evidence of an illness. A German hospital denies reports it treated Andreas Lubitz for depression, but does confirm he had been a patient there recently. Medical documents have been seized from the home of Lubitz, which include torn-up sick notes from a doctor on the day of the crash.
Among all of those items, they found a lot of torn-up sick notes, which suggested that he was not reporting in sick, but instead going to work.
That was AP correspondent David Rising. Iran's foreign minister is condemning Saudi-led airstrikes in Yemen, but says the nuclear talks in Switzerland between his nation and six world powers remains focused on reaching a deal. The agreement would reportedly curb Iran's nuclear activities in exchange for sanctions relief. Meanwhile, strikes against Iranian-backed Shiite rebels who are trying to seize control in Yemen are straining relations between the Sunni Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and the predominantly Shiite Iran. This is USA Radio News.
Thousands of Americans are losing weight and feeling better with the 10-2-and-a-chew weight loss system from ILikeHowILook.com. Here is U.S. Army Sergeant Dave Myers.
Since I started taking the Nufina, probably, I want to say 60, 65 days ago, I have lost over 12 pounds. I have a long military career, and it has caused some issues with my knees and my ankles over the years, and I have become accustomed to just being in pain with one of those areas. I can only attribute the way I feel to the Nufina because that's the only thing that's changed in my diet, and I am absolutely pain-free in knees and ankles, and it just feels great to be able to get out and run around and move pain-free again.
The Nufina Collagen Protein Shake is part of the 10-2-and-a-chew weight loss system from ILikeHowILook.com. Collagen feeds the joints, hair, and skin. This could help you lose weight, feel better, and look younger. Watch the video on ILikeHowILook.com and get the full story. They even offer free samples. Go to ILikeHowILook.com.
The news is sponsored by Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc.
Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they'll live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their own terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. They are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within your reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton, Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you achieve your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. That's 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Ameriprise Financial Services, Incorporated, member FINRA and SIPC.
Okay, we're back. I'm Pat Smith. The program is The Law. So what else is happening in the law? Well, the New Jersey Supreme Court, we have a bias crime law, and people need to be very aware of it. And what the court held, though, is the bias crime law that applies based solely on the victim's perception of bias, even if that was not the defendant's motivation, was struck down as unconstitutional by the state Supreme Court on March 17th. And the case State versus Pominek concerned the use of New Jersey's bias intimidation statute in connection with an incident in which a black man was locked in a cage by a white coworker, and another white coworker allegedly remarked, "Oh, you see, you throw a it's pretty outrageous what was said. Oh, you see, you throw a banana in the cage and he goes right in." Now, that was part of the Supreme Court opinion. I've not read the entire opinion. I'm sure that there was a lot more to it because this is pretty you know, pretty outrageous comment. But in any event, what the Supreme Court justices said is that the bias crime law can't be applied solely on the victim's perception of bias. It has to be more than just the victim's perception of bias before there can be a conviction. Now, if you know, probably most of us know, that there's been a New Jersey sports betting. There's an issue of whether or not New Jersey's repeal of the ban on sports betting in casinos and racetracks violates federal law. And the common question, that is the common question for the lawyers who argued on either side of the issue, and that was argued before the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit. And the issue was whether decriminalizing sports betting in certain instances was the equivalent to the state authorizing sports betting in violation of the Federal Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act, the PASPA, P-A-S-P-A. So that was argued just recently before the the U.S. Court of Appeals. So that decision has not yet been rendered, and we can expect it could take some period of time before it does. So there's a medical malpractice case approved for publication, and again, as I said, if a case is approved for publication, that means it can be used as precedent. In this case, Parker versus Poole was an appellate division decision, and in this medical malpractice suit, the appellate division concluded that the trial court's exclusion of the defendant's treating physician's deposition testimony on a critical issue of causation constituted reversible error. So what happens, of course, is the trial judges have to listen to all the evidence, and they have to listen to the objections, and they have to make rulings. And if, in fact, it's a critical issue that they get wrong, the appellate division is certainly going to let them know that on appeal. So this was a case where the trial court excluded the critical deposition testimony, finding that it was speculative. However, the appellate division held that a party's answer to a valid deposition question is admissible to impeach contrary trial testimony, even if the answer is speculative. So what they did is the court followed a federal precedent. Hearsay statements are admitted under the New Jersey Rule of Evidence 803B1. And they're not a party opponent exception, are not subject to the personal knowledge trustworthiness. The point here is that, in fact, the deposition testimony on the critical issue of causation, the court should have allowed the doctor's deposition testimony in and didn't. That means it was reversible error, and the appellate division sent it back to the trial judge to what we usually call a do-over. There was also a recent case, and there was a jury. In this case, there was a jury verdict for damages sustained by a 13-year-old boy when the bicycle he was riding was struck by a police car, and the police car was driven by a Newark police detective. And what happened is the officer had arrested an individual for a DP, a disorderly persons offense, and was transporting the prisoner to police headquarters for processing. And that's when the collision occurred. And so on appeal, the appellate division was called upon to determine whether the municipal defendants are entitled to good faith immunity under the statute, which provides that a public employee is not liable if he acts in good faith in the execution or enforcement of any law. Important. It has to be that the employee would not be liable as long as he acts in good faith in the execution or enforcement of a law. And the court held that this record was devoid of any showing of emergent circumstances. Therefore, they concluded that the police officer was not acting in the execution or enforcement of any law, which would have afforded him immunity under the statute. So just because he was transporting a prisoner to police headquarters when a collision occurred is not sufficient. It's not, he was not then, or at least the court did not say he was doing something such as enforcement of any law. It's simply providing the guy with a ride. So that was, that is the difference in, you know, this case compared to other cases. Now that, and we, I talked a few minutes ago about this, the Supreme Court in Pominack, it's P-O-M-I-A-N-E-K, and what the court, the Supreme Court said is that subsection, which is the bias intimidation statute, that subsection of the statute fails to give adequate notice of the conduct it proscribes, meaning conduct that is not permissible, and therefore it was unconstitutionally vague and violates the due process clause of the 14th Amendment. In other words, if you're going to be charged with a crime, you have to clearly understand what that crime is. And that's why if something is not clear, it needs to be rewritten so that, in fact, the average person or the person who has never really thought about any of these things will know about it and can understand it and would not violate it. So all of those things are, you know, especially if it's criminal. I mean, people have to be well aware if, in fact, they're going to be charged with a crime. They have to understand, or at least the general public has to understand, that something, in fact, there is a statute. And somebody just didn't make this up as we go along. And, of course, you know, that's one reason why, I don't know, I don't even think we can say that's a reason why we have all these statutes. I think a lot of people just, you know, don't have anything better to do, and they start writing statutes to the point where, you know, they're just hundreds and thousands of statutes on the books, which I'm sure that it would be a rare police officer who would even know what some of these statutes are, much less being able to enforce the criminal ones. Okay, we're going to be back shortly, and then we'll be coming up on the sports guys soon.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is a Forward New Jersey Coalition member.
London Bridge is falling down, falling down, falling down. London Bridge is falling down.
In August 2007, the I-35 bridge in Minneapolis collapsed, killing 13 people and injuring 145, including little children trapped on a school bus. The bridge had been rated structurally deficient, but those warnings were ignored.
Build it up with iron and steel, iron and steel, iron.
In New Jersey, there are 479 bridges carrying over 8 million vehicles a day, rated worse.
Iron and steel will bend and bow, bend and bow, bend.
These aren't just bridges waiting to be fixed. There are tragedies waiting to happen. On June 30th, the state's transportation fund will be empty. We need to replenish it now, because next time, it could be your family on that bridge. Go to forwardnewjersey.com and find out how you can help. Paid for by Forward New Jersey.
Well, we're back, and a few more things to go through before the end of the program today. I've talked to you already about this $9.6 million Borgata suit over card markings against professional gambler Phil Ivey. There is another one, at least if you're going to be a chaperone, you can, you know, you'll have some protection, although I think chaperones take a lot of risk if they decide to chaperone their kids, their high school kids, on some of these trips. But in any event, New Jersey authorities cannot prosecute two high school chaperones accused of having sex with three high school students on a trip to Germany. So, you know, this was the chaperones themselves that were acting criminally or inappropriately. But the state Supreme Court in New Jersey ruled on March 18th that New Jersey authorities cannot prosecute these individuals. And this was a unanimous court ruling, and the Supreme Court said that New Jersey prosecutors have no authority to prosecute sex crimes that occurred outside the state's borders. So this is a pretty significant decision. So if something happens outside of New Jersey, the Supreme Court is saying no, even if the victim lives in New Jersey, you cannot prosecute. And one of the things, other than that, sometimes what comes up is whether or not something that's a crime in New Jersey is a crime in another state. So at least in this case, when the chaperone case, under our statutes, a basis for territorial jurisdiction established when conduct that is the element of the offense occurs in New Jersey. So the conduct would have had to occur in New Jersey, and in this case there was no basis for territorial jurisdiction in New Jersey. And that's because the elements of the charged crimes that relate to the defendant's conduct occurred entirely overseas. So there was no part of this conduct that occurred here in the United States. So, commit crimes in New Jersey, you're going to be prosecuted in New Jersey. If you commit crimes elsewhere, that's a good defense if they're tried to, or anyone tries to prosecute you here in New Jersey. Of course, a better way is to just not commit any crimes anywhere. Then you don't. Then we don't have to worry about any of it. Now there's a bill limiting access to cars' back black boxes. And that measure that would restrict access to information on electronic data recorders, which are known as the black boxes, that are installed in automobiles, that legislation has won final approval. The Senate voted 38-0 to approve the Assembly bill. And the Assembly bill had passed the lower houses of the legislature in a 68-0 vote in December. So I'm sure that with this latest, they will be pushing as much as possible to get, you know, everything done. So the justices in New Jersey, also the Supreme Court, heard arguments on March 17th whether they should expand the ability of injured plaintiffs to use the mode of operation doctrine and make it easier for them to prove premises liability claims. And apparently the attorney representing a plaintiff whose award of damages was overturned because a trial judge charged the jury with the mode of operations doctrine. And they asked the court to reinstate the award and said the appellate division just read the doctrine too narrowly. Apparently, you've heard that New Jersey, there was this ExxonMobil settlement. And so now the Senate, March 16th, actually, that was a while ago, and said, they approved a measure urging a state judge to reject a controversial proposed settlement in environmental litigation. So that'll be something to look at, unfortunately. So what else is happening? Well, I think it's about time to get to the weather, or get to the news, I guess I should say. Now there's some new. There were two New Jersey lawyers charged with ethics violation for using Facebook in defending a personal injury lawsuit, and lawyers should be reading that and making sure they don't violate that. Now, this workers' compensation, and I think this is the same case that I talked about, where the woman appealed from orders granting summary judgment to both the individual defendant, Sally Oatwin, and the defendant, Devereaux Foundation. And that was what the allegations and the facts were, is the plaintiff, the woman who filed the claim, was the manager of a group home for adults with developmental disabilities. And that home was owned and operated by by Devereaux. That was the foundation. And the plaintiffs in that case were aware that some of the patients could exhibit violent behavior. So the plaintiff in this case was aware that some of the patients could exhibit violent behavior. And then as part of her employment, the plaintiff was trained in self-defense techniques and taught how to diffuse potentially violent situations. So this case goes on and on and on about whether or not she had a right to go further. In fact, she does under the ethics, and once she presents that, she can go ahead and proceed from there. So I think that's about going to wrap up what we have to say today. I'll be back after the news, and we'll be here with the sports guys. So stay tuned. We're going to have, I think, a good program today, an interesting program. We'll obviously be speaking about March Madness, even though you have some sports guys who ordinarily don't even watch basketball. But I'm going to challenge my fellow sports guys today, because if they haven't been watching some of these games, they really have been fascinating, even though I am a diehard football fan and usually don't watch basketball. But stay tuned. We'll play the news, and we'll be back with the sports guys.
USA Radio News. I'm Kelly Sloan. The co-pilot of the German Wings plane hid evidence of an illness. A German hospital denies reports it treated Andreas Lubitz for depression, but does confirm he had been a patient there recently. Medical documents have been seized from the home of Lubitz, which include torn-up sick notes from a doctor on the day of the crash.
Among all of those items, they found a lot of torn-up sick notes, which suggested that he was not reporting in sick, but instead going to work.
That was AP correspondent David Rising. Iran's foreign minister is condemning Saudi-led airstrikes in Yemen, but says the nuclear talks in Switzerland between his nation and six world powers remains focused on reaching a deal. The agreement would reportedly curb Iran's nuclear activities in exchange for sanctions relief. Meanwhile, strikes against Iranian-backed Shiite rebels who are trying to seize control in Yemen are straining relations between the Sunni Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and the predominantly Shiite Iran. This is USA Radio News.
Bad credit card debt happens to good people. Credit card companies lure you in with low introductory rates or low minimum payments. And before you know it, you owe thousands of dollars in credit card debt. It has happened to millions of good people just like you. But here's the good news. Thanks to a powerful program now approved, anyone with $2,000 or more in credit card debt can cut their credit card payments up to half and even reduce or eliminate interest charges altogether. That's right. Our nationwide nonprofit program is helping U.S. residents cut their credit card payments. Call 800- 1-800-991-6376 now. The call and information are free. Credit Guard has helped over 500,000 people with their credit card debt, and now we can help you. Call 800-991-6376 to see how this powerful nonprofit program can work for you. Bad credit card debt happens to good people. Get free of credit card debt today. Call 800-991-6376. That's 800-991-6376.